Welcome to the Intuitive Awakening Podcast. I'm your host, Deanna Riddick. I'm an author, teacher, and eternal seeker of truth. I am on a mission to spread metaphysical knowledge to help you awaken your spirit. If you want to learn how to open the door to your divine self, you are in the right place. All right. Hello. Welcome to Intuitive Awakening. I have two wonderful guests joining me for today's episode, which I'm really anxious to talk about. Our two guests are Nisha and Norma Burton. So Nisha and Norma blend ancient wisdom with cutting edge innovation in their work with lucid dreaming and personal transformation. Their unique approach combines traditional dreamwork practices with modern technology and multicultural perspectives, offering practical tools for self-discovery and life purpose alignment. Norma brings 30 plus years of expertise in, it's either Jungian or Jungian, I've heard it pronounced a couple of different ways, dreamwork, Buddhist psychology, and indigenous traditions through her proven journey to completion system. Nisha is an award-winning filmmaker, and she uniquely integrates VR, which is virtual reality, I'm assuming, and AI technology with ancestral practices from her Cherokee, West African, and Celtic heritage. Nisha is a skilled dream worker trained in the art of journeying into the deep subconscious from a very young age. So I'm very excited that both of you are here to talk all about lucid dreaming. It's really funny. I have family members, my sisters and my niece, who can lucid dream, but it is not for me for some reason. I would love to kind of start from the beginning. I don't know who wants to go first, but how did lucid, like exploring this technique, come about for both of you?
I can start off. Yeah. So lucid dreaming, as you just wonderfully said, dream work in general has been a part of my life for a long time, being raised by my mom, Norma, and, you know, in her lineage of teaching about these powerful dream practices. Then from the time I was a kid, I was really encouraged in the dream time, which I feel like some kids are, some kids aren't, but I was very lucky to be encouraged that my nighttime visions and experiences were valid and were worth thinking about and worth integrating into my daytime reality too. So I always had a very strong dreaming practice and a big connection to my dream time. And then in my early 20s, I really started being interested in lucid dreaming and as a practice rather than just something that happens spontaneously, which a lot of people do have that in their childhood. And I did as well, where I'd be like, oh, I'm dreaming. And then I'd have a lucid dream. But then I found the works of Stephen LaBerge and Tibetan dream yoga. And I had this moment of really realizing that we spend so much of our consciousness, so much of our nights, right, in the dream time. And there's a great opportunity in that to learn how to navigate your psyche and navigate these liminal realms consciously with lucidity. And sometimes I like to, in the beginning, give a definition of lucid dreaming too, if that's helpful, because some people know and some people don't. But lucid dreaming is where you know beyond a doubt that you're dreaming within the dream, and then you're able to interact with the dream material in ways that you couldn't if you were just non-lucid, if you were having a regular dream. And there's different types of dreams too. Like there's very vivid dreams, there's very transformational dreams, there's dreams that are more of the clutter of what you were thinking about during the day. But lucidity is its whole own thing, where you come to the conscious realization within the dream that you're dreaming. And then it's like a light switch clicking on and you become lucid, and the quality of the dream completely changes and it feels as real as waking reality a lot of times. So it's an amazing experience.
And, you know, I'm also curious, like Norma, for yourself, when you were younger, did you have a lot of lucid dreaming experiences as well?
Yes, thank you for asking. I definitely had a lot of dreams from the time I was really small. And as Nisha had me to encourage her, I had my parents and grandmother to encourage me. My grandmother was a nurse, and we lived on the edge of an Indian reservation, and she would do all the medical care for the people. And people would come to her with their dreams, and she was a big dreamer and dream interpreter, and she would have prophetic dreams for them. So I grew up with that being normalized, you know, like that was just part of her healing practice, being tuned into the dreams. And then she always would listen to my dreams and encourage me to think that they were important. You know? And so I got guided by my dreams from a young age. I had angel guides and animal guides, and it was just a natural part of thinking that's what life's about, you know? And then as I got older, I realized, wow, not everybody values the dream time like that. So I started seeking out teachers and trainers, and I was really guided to Native American people and South American people, curanderos, and different people who were steeped in skill with psychonavigation, which led me into doing drumming journeys, which it's, you know, using a drum, a round open back drum, and guiding people in shamanic drum and trance-induced journeys that teach you how to navigate the liminal realms. And we have a book coming out actually in the spring. We have a book you've already seen, which is liminal, about lucid dreaming and liminal spaces, lucid dreaming, lucid living, the book in the Oracle deck. But we've got another book that's taking it the next level deeper in training about psychonavigation, called Navigating Liminal Realms. So I feel like from a young age, I was being trained and encouraged by both my family, but also in the dream time itself, because guides come to you. And I think every human has guides and access to that, but we just aren't encouraged and trained in it.
And that's kind of one question I have for you both. I have like so many questions in my head, but when we think about dreaming, because we dream, I think almost every night, I would like to think that even though we don't remember, I feel like in society, we kind of brush those off. Like, you know, dreaming and what happens in your dreams isn't very, we don't analyze it that much. We don't take it seriously. It's just something that happens. And I guess I would love to understand both from both of your perspectives, why you think that we don't spend a lot of time, you know, thinking about our dream world, why we had that dream, the power, I guess, the power of dream work.
It's super important as humans for us to value this whole other part of our consciousness. We really are multidimensional beings. It's not just about ordinary reality. Just the fact that we spend half of our lives in this multidimensional space is who we are. So we have access, and we are not trained by our society to have access, like you're saying. Why? Well, it's a very, at least Western culture has been a very mechanical oriented, production oriented, go to work and serve, you know, through working in ordinary reality to accumulate the rewards in the material world, all of that, right? So they don't really want people to pay attention to their dreams. Our dreams are the gateway to our creativity, to our soul's callings, you know? And we need to be in touch with our creativity to feel really alive and to be following our true life path. So the soul awakening would might make you unhappy with your plight in ordinary reality. So we can see why we're not conditioned to remember them. But I say that when we start listening to our dreams, it's as if we're beckoning little woodland animals out of the woods that don't quite trust us yet. And if we just value them and are kind and gentle to our dreams, they'll start coming out more, and they'll gradually get tame, and they'll give us a lot. But at first, we just have to value the tiny little things that we remember. And so Nisha can talk about this, but we really encourage people to start keeping a dream journal. And that's a way of showing your dream time that you're listening and that you value it. In fact, the other night I had a very clear dream about our political situations, and a voice said to me right in the dream, "Are you listening? Are you listening to this?" Yes, yes. Okay, I'm listening. Right? So much comes through the dream time, and they want us to listen and pay attention.
They definitely do. And Nisha, I would love to hear about the dream, like a dream journal, but I also want to get your take on why we don't, I guess, value dreams as much as I think older cultures used to. And I'm sure around the world many cultures still do, but yes, here, you know, at least in the United States, it's not something that you normally find people talking about unless you have a close circle of friends and you're all into the same things. But and the best point you made also, Norma, is that we spend half our time sleeping, you know, so why don't we value what's happening during that time?
Yeah, I really am passionate about this topic, right? Because teaching people about the dream time is teaching them about the value contained within it. And it's so true that within our Western culture, we've been taught to disregard the dream time, really, you know. And like I was saying earlier, I'm so thankful to have the mom that I did. But a lot of people as children, they wake up and their parents are like, oh, that was just a dream. Or, you know, in school, they're talking about something and the teachers are like, that was just a dream. And so this whole just a dream narrative from a young age teaches us to, okay, well, that's not something that I need to pay attention to. It's not important for this waking reality. So let me disregard it completely. Whereas, like you were just saying, from, you know, up until very recent history, cultures across the world and even the Western culture did really value the dream time and keep track of it. And every morning you would share your dreams with one another over the breakfast table, right? And it would be integrated. And even, you know, like shamans of various cultures would be the ones that were the dreamers. So they would, for the whole community, dream, and they would share their dreams that would tell about prophetically, you know, what was going on in their communities. And even in our most recent book that we were writing, we were talking about polyphasic sleep, which is, it's a big word, meaning just not sleeping the way that we do, where we do it in one chunk, but rather breaking it up. And even in Western culture, that was a practice where they'd have what's called the second sleep. So people would wake up in the middle of the night, like around 2 or 3 in the morning, 4, and they would get up and do things and talk about their dreams and then go back to sleep. And the way of having it broken up like that really made it so that the dream time was more integrated with waking reality. And then, as my mom was saying, when productivity became the key, the Industrial Revolution, all of these things about making and doing in this waking reality and cut off from the creativity, then that's kind of where the dream time got pushed to the edges. And another part, which my mom was kind of just talking about too, is it connects you with your intuition. Your dream time really is your deep inner guidance and inner knowing. And so there, you know, to disconnect people from that is then to be able to have more control over them, because they're not connected to their own knowing of what they want for their lives, of what the right directions are to go in their lives. And so that's why the profound power of reconnecting with your dream time is the ability to reconnect with your inner knowing. And so one example that people have probably experienced is they'll say, oh, I love my job, it's great, it's fine. And then every night they'll go to sleep and have a dream about being, you know, yelled at by their boss, or having like an elephant run through their office building and destroy everything. And so it can happen in symbolic ways, but it's your subconscious saying, no, actually, we're not really happy with the situation, even if you're denying and trying to pretend like it's an okay situation.
Yeah, I think that's super, it's very, very common. And I like that you're just, the whole concept of your intuition speaking to you during, you know, while you're sleeping, because as both of you know, and everybody who's listening, yes, we go to our 9-to-5 and we're told, you know, this is what we're supposed to value. It's like work, 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 work. That's what life, you know, contains, but there's so much more happening. I'd like to say behind the scenes, right? To create reality. And I want to, you know, Norma, you talked about us being multidimensional beings. So we're multidimensional beings. Does this mean that when we're sleeping, we have access to multidimensional reality? I don't know if that's a good question or not, but I was curious, like both of you, like, where are we going once we take that nap or once we're going to sleep for those 8 hours, if you get that?
Great question. And I'll give you some examples from my dream time. There was a period of years in which I was at night taken to different places around the world where there were catastrophes happening. And I was there, I believe, as a team of Dreamtime workers helping people to go through the dying process. So I would wake up the next day and find out where I had been in the Dreamtime, that something was happening on Earth. So it was happening to me a lot during times when there were a lot of struggles in Central and South America. It happened to me when things were going on in China at Tiananmen Square. I was taken there when many people were dying. One time I was in a recreational center in Japan where there were lots of children and teachers. And I was there because I knew that a tidal wave was coming. And so I gathered the teachers and I said, look, tidal wave's coming. So we just need to huddle the children around and all be singing together when it comes. So I helped them to do that. And the tidal wave came, crashed down, and everyone was killed. Well, the next day, I happened to turn on the radio, which I didn't usually do. And coming over the news right then was the report that previous night, would have been day, their time, a tidal wave came, and the only thing that was destroyed was a big recreational center where all the teachers and students were killed. So it was a validation that I was allowed to have to see that it was real, that I was being taken to places all over the planet to help people make that transition. So we are taken to real places sometimes. There can even be places we're taken to in other parts of the galaxy. And that has happened to Nisha quite a bit. We also can meet up with beings that are not of the Earth realm, right? In shamanic teachings, there are three basic zones of multidimensionality to go to. There's the upper world, the lower world, and the middle world. So through shamanic drumming, you're taken by the drumming journey into the underworld first, always, because you go there to encounter the ancestors, to encounter the shadow aspects of yourself, where your heritage, people, and in your life, people have misused power, because they're taking you to the underworld to encounter the shadow so that you learn how to heal that, heal your wounds, so that you won't be one that is continuing the misuse of power. So you have to go humbly into the underworld first, into the womb of the mother, into the earth, into the dream time that way to heal the wounds first. Then you're allowed to go to the upper world. In the upper world, you meet beings of great power, beings of light. The birds are very active there. You go to palaces of crystals, etc. You're in realms of power. But you're not supposed to go to that upper world journey until you've healed your misuse of power in the underworld. So then in the upper world journey, you're getting trained by wizards and wise beings to use power in a good way to change reality. Then the last zone that you go to is the middle world. And it's interesting that we've been brought up with Tolkien and things like that that show there's a middle world. But the middle world is a bit different than our ordinary reality, but it's like our ordinary reality. But it's like the dream time running parallel to ordinary reality. But in the middle world, you can have more powers active and change time and space reality. So you're not supposed to go to the middle world until you're very healed of your shadow wounds and misuse of power and have learned to handle power in the upper world. And then you come to the middle world where you apply this changing of reality. So magic is called the ability to change reality at will. So that's where, you know, magicians and magic is applied in the middle world. So does that help to understand a bit about multidimensionality?
It does, but I think my question for you then is, with the upper and lower and middle world, are these I'm going to say places, areas, I guess, or dimensions that you travel to while you're sleeping? Or
yes.
Is it? Okay.
Yes,
okay.
You can travel. You do travel there while you're sleeping. And you also can be guided there through the drumming journey, which is also like a lucid dream, because you have one foot in this world, one foot in the other world when the drumming journey is going on. But you do travel there during your regular dreams too. So you're taken to many, many places at night when you're dreaming. And as you're guided along, you know, and become more and more tuned into your dreams, you can see what I'm saying. It's purposeful. You know, we're here. I think each of us are here with an, I call it an incarnational destiny. We're incarnated with a certain destiny to heal certain wounded patterns from our family lineage, you know, in our society. We each have a path we're supposed to walk to heal these ways that power has been misused, and bring that all the way through to creating of a better reality, a new reality. So we're meant to change history and change the way things are done in the earthly realms, but also in the other dimensions too. Many things are going on that are creating reality. So we're meant to have these relationships with beings of power, guides in the other dimensions.
And Nisha, so, okay. And forgive me, I may have not heard this correctly. When in your dream state, where have you been guided to travel to, or where have you been to? I would like to hear about that.
Yeah, definitely. And going off of what Norma was just saying, you know, there are parallels, which in our most recent book, we're really talking about between what happens, which she was just talking about with the three worlds and the drumming journeys and accessing the underworld that way, the lower world, and dreaming and lucid dreaming too. And so, for example, if you think of the underworld or lower world type dreams, those could sometimes be nightmares, right? Because you're encountering the shadows, you're encountering what you're afraid of, you're encountering all of these things that are in your psyche to be dealt with. And then the upper world dreams, I have found, are really like lucid dreams, and a lot of where lucid dreams will take you, because you are going, once you advance in your lucid dreaming practice, you begin going to these really fantastical realms and encountering energies and beings and guides that are, like my mom was just saying, of a magical caliber. And you're being instructed in those realms, and you're being instructed how, when you bring conscious awareness, when you bring lucidity into the dream time, then you can navigate it with more power, with more agency, and how to use that power and how to handle it in a good way. And then the middle world too, I have found striking similarities to out of body experiences, which are slightly different than lucid dreams. Whereas within a lucid dream, you become aware that you're dreaming within the dream, right? You snap on. The out-of-body experience oftentimes starts when you are asleep in your bed. And a lot of people have had the experience of sleep paralysis, which is when you are waking up, but you can't move your body yet. And it's actually like a chemical situation that's happening in your brain, where it's coming online asynchronously, meaning that normally we are paralyzed when we're sleeping so that we don't act out our dreams and, you know, start running around. Most of the time, that body paralysis wears off before we wake up. But what happens with sleep paralysis is the body paralysis is still happening while your conscious mind is coming back online into waking reality. And so it's a very frightful experience for a lot of people. And sometimes they will even see figures at the bottom of their bed, or, you know, see things and feel scared because they can't move. And yet, as you work with lucid dreaming and out-of-body experiences more, you're able to use that state to actually propel yourself into an out-of-body experience, because your body is already immobilized and your conscious, waking, lucid mind is coming back online. And so then you can even, once you get, you know, skilled at it, pull your dream body up out of your sleeping body, and then you're in this more mundane reality rather than in a dream reality, right? You're in your bedroom, but it's slightly different. It's 1 foot in the dream time, 1 foot in waking reality. And so then in that out of body experience, like I was just saying, it's a lot like the middle world where you're walking in this reality, but in the dream time. And so that's kind of how we've drawn parallels to these worlds that you multidimensionally can move through, and the lucid dreaming and in your dream world, how you're moving through those places. And with the underworld too, you can have lucidity in that space, which is really powerful because I'll give an example. When you become lucid in a nightmare or in a recurring stressful situation, for me, one that I used to have was that people were trying to break into my house. And it would be a recurring nightmare theme where, like, I'm in my room and then I see somebody outside the window and then I hear somebody trying to open the door. And normally it's terrifying. But then as I got better at lucid dreaming, I used that as what's called a dream sign. And dream signs are things that happen often in your dreams, in your personal dreams, recurring situations. And so one night, in my dream, I was in my house and I had that same situation where, oh, there's somebody that's trying to get in the door. But then I had the moment where I paused and I thought, wait a minute, this always happens in my dream. Could this be a dream? And then I did what's called a reality or a state check, which is an action you perform to check if you're dreaming or not. And the one that I did that a lot of people know is you flip your hands back and forth. And if they stay the same, then you know, okay, I'm not dreaming, I'm in waking reality. But if you flip them back and forth and they change in any way. So for me, my hands had two extra fingers on them. And then I said, oh, wait a minute. Okay, I know for sure that I'm dreaming. And that's when lucidity clicks on. So then I became lucid in this nightmarish situation dream. And from that, in the lucid state, I knew nothing could hurt me. I knew it was a dream. And so then I laughed, and what was terrifying before transformed into joyful. And I went ahead over to the door and I opened the door up and I let the figure that was trying to break in come in. And I looked at him and he looked at me and I said, I'm lucid. I know I'm dreaming, so you can't hurt me. And he went from menacing into also a friendly figure. And we started laughing together and flying around the room together. So that's just an example of how lucid dreaming, bringing lucidity into the underworld state too, into the nightmarish states, can really be so powerful and so transformative from those traumas and reoccurring fears that you have in your psyche.
Definitely. And I think if people learned how to, yes, become lucid, especially when they've had, let's say, recurring nightmares or even in a nightmare, it would be, yes, very transformative for them. So the million-dollar question I'm sure everybody wants me to ask is, how do you have a lucid dream? How do you become lucid in your dream? Like, what, like, do you both have different practices, or what are your practices? How does, you know, and how, and when did you first realize, like, oh yeah, I can do this now. Like, this is easy for me.
I can jump in, take that away. And then if you want to add anything too. Lucid dreaming, like I've been saying before, really is a practice. And it's like any other skill set where some people, yes, they have a natural inclination to it. They have lucid dreams spontaneously. Other people have never had a lucid dream. But I really do believe that anybody can learn how to lucid dream because it is a skill set. It's not just something some people are gifted with and other people aren't. And what it takes is doing regular daily practices while you're awake to train your mind towards lucidity, to train your mind how to lucid dream. So I'll lay out the foundational tools that you need to learn how to lucid dream. The first thing that you need to do, as we've been talking about, is to remember your dreams, right? That kind of makes sense. Phase one is you need to connect with your dream time, and you need to be able at least to get bits and pieces of some of your dreams. And so some people really struggle with that even first stage because in our culture, we have been so cut off from our dream time. And yet there are things you can do, like when you wake up, staying in the same position, trying to have, even if you just have one day a week where you're not waking up to an alarm, but you're able to naturally just wake up and then pull back any little piece of the dream that you were just having. If it's faded away, One, not believing like, oh, I can't remember my dreams, like not letting yourself go there, because that can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. Whereas if you say, okay, I can remember my dreams, and then think of even an emotion or a scene that was just happening or one little piece of it, a feeling, then it's what we call catching the tail of the dragon, where once you catch that little end piece of the dream, then the whole, you can start riding the dragon back into your dream, because the whole dream oftentimes comes flooding back into you once you remember a little piece of it. So starting to have a practice, writing down your dreams as much as you can, every night if you can, or every morning when you wake up, and getting a catalog of your dreams and connecting to your dream time. The next thing you do then is you start tracking, like you heard me talk about, your dream signs. And these are things that are unique to your dream time, but a lot of people have similar ones too. For example, being in an elevator can be a dream sign for people. Being by large bodies of water, by the ocean, having travel situations where you're traveling from one place to another, trying to get from one place to another. Maybe you're in your office oftentimes in your dreams. So they're your personal things. For me, I have a funny one, which in my dreams, a lot of times I'll be in a bathroom, like a public bathroom, and it'll be kind of gross. But that's for me really knowing like, oh, wait a minute, this is what I dream about, and it's a dream sign for me. So then the next thing you do is you take those dream signs, and oftentimes there'll be things that are also happening in your waking reality. So for me, again, let's use the bathroom example. Then I go to the bathroom, public bathrooms in waking reality too. And what you do is every time you encounter a dream sign in waking reality, you perform what's called a state check or a reality check, like I just talked about. And so a lot of people don't know the ones of looking at your hands and seeing if they change. Another fun one is you can jump up in the air. And if you come back to the ground like you would with gravity, then you know, okay, I'm awake. This is waking reality. But if you float, if you fly, if you levitate for even a second longer, then you know beyond a doubt that you're dreaming. And what these state checks do, and there's a lot of them, is that you are checking which reality you're in, waking reality or the dream time. And once you make that check, then your mind knows beyond a doubt that it is either in waking reality or the dream time. And when you do a state check in the dream time, that's when you become lucid, because then you verify to your mind, okay, I'm dreaming. So now I have the realization I'm in the dream within the dream. And so as you can hear, what you're doing is then every day while you're awake, you're performing these state checks. You're asking yourself earnestly if you could be dreaming or not. Because it's easy to be like, could I be dreaming? Of course I'm not dreaming. Like, this is totally normal. This is definitely waking reality. And yet we think that in our dreams too. It's not until we wake up that we realize, wait, there was a pink elephant in the middle of the room, but for some reason I thought that was just totally normal in waking reality. And so you're verifying to yourself every day, am I dreaming? Am I awake? Am I dreaming? Am I awake? And that's training the mind to then be questioning that. So then you ask that same question in your dreams. And then when you ask that question in your dreams, you become lucid. And so that is the pathway to lucidity. You can also, if you're, you know, you can do it with your dream signs, but if you really want to become lucid, then do a state check and ask yourself if you could be dreaming every time you walk through a door. Because that's something we do a lot in waking reality. And so then every day you're constantly questioning, could I be dreaming? Could I be dreaming? And doing the state check. And I've told many people this, and they come back to me and they say, wow, I never had a lucid dream. I had such a hard time with it. But when I did that practice, then I had a lucid dream like last night, you know, it happens really quickly. So it's something that anybody can really achieve if they feel dedicated and called to it as a practice.
And Norma, is your practice very similar to Nisha's?
From the time I was young, little, I was having lucid dreams naturally, right? So I would be in the dream, and then flying was one of my dream signs, you know? So as I was flying, I am awake now and come into a lucid state, and then be able to go places in the flying state that I wanted to go and experience things that I wanted to. And so it was coming to me naturally. But then in my 20s, I started learning the shamanic method of going into the drumming journey. And so she talked all about how to do it with dreams. And so I want to talk about the value of the drumming journey. This method was used all over the planet in ancient times, you know, up to current times, but they call it the religion behind the religions of the past 6,000 years. It was a spirituality all over the planet for thousands of years, where the drum was used because it has a certain rhythm that attunes your brain to the right number of beats per minute, so that your brain opens up to about the rhythm of the earth. And you're then taken into a lucid state. And there's a gradual growth process, developmental process within the lucid state, going into it that way, that you're taken on. So now, having led literally thousands of people on these journeys over the years, you know, I've learned the step-by-step process that everybody goes through. I don't tell people ahead of time. I let it happen in their own timing, in their own way, but I get to watch how there is a methodology that we're taken on step by step into learning how to navigate lucidly. So it's an ancient technology that really exists. And I've done it with people in Japan and Europe and South America, Australia. Everywhere around the planet, people go to the same geographies. So there's a geography of the lucid dream state that exists for all humans. Isn't that wild?
That is wild. Yes. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, there are places that we all go, and I get to watch this happening and say, oh, now they're going to this whole zone where you go to the campfires and you meet the circle of elders, and you meet your particular ancestors, and you're taken into training by them. Oh, now they're going through what I call the test of four with the power animal. There are these four aspects of the power animal that will present itself to you. Everybody goes through that so that they know for sure that that is their secure guide. Things like that. There are, you know, there are all these lessons that come that are universal, and there are places that people go that have a similar look to them. Like, oh, this is the realm of all of the rivers. Oh, this is the particular zone where you have to deal with this challenging issue. Oh, now they're in that zone. Wow. So it's amazing that there are realms that humans have to explore in a systematic way in the multi-dimensions. And you can meet people that, oh yes, I'm from that planetary place. Oh wow, you're from there too. I saw a red ocean and black sand, and yes, wow, I have the same experience. So there are, you know, there are these zones that we all go to and that you can learn. And they all have different powers that you attain there and different experiences you're supposed to have.
So through the drumming, when you are in the middle of it, or even at the beginning, are you approaching this with a very specific intention?
Yes. Intention is everything. As Carlos Castaneda said that, he said, intention is everything. One time people were at a dinner party with him and they said, how important is it, intention? And he picked up a big knife and he stuck it in the table and it just was vibrating there. You know? He said, intention is everything. So yes, you're going into the drumming journey with an intention. So we spend a lot of time in the beginning coming to understand, what is your intention for this time of your life? I find that people are going in certain cyclical patterns in their life. And usually that pattern lasts about 2 years. And so for a certain period of time in your life, you have an intent for that time period. The intent has two parts to it. I call it the via positiva and the via negativa. You have the positive goal you're trying to reach toward and grow yourself into becoming a better person that way, with the positive goal. But hand in hand with that goes the via negativa, which is the shadow material that is related to that power you're wanting to gain, that you must explore so that you heal your trauma wounds around that use of power. So it's a package deal that you have via positiva and the via negativa that make up your intent. So that's a big part of my training in the beginning with people, is finding out what their intent is for this time of life. It's amazing that, you know, people go around through their life without organizing their life very much around their what their intent is, needs to be. So spending time figuring out your intent, and then it's taught that the intent is like the rudder on the ship. As you go into the lucid state, to the dream time, the intent guides you. You're always following after your intent and not getting distracted and going elsewhere. A lot of psychological methods are very random, and they don't really train people how to follow after their intent in their unconscious or in the dream time. So intent, you're right, it's very, very important.
And with lucid dreaming too, intent is so important because it's what propels your lucid dreaming practice. And so the first one for everybody is to become lucid, of course. But then there are building intents you can have to keep returning to lucidity, because it's really what drives the motivation towards having lucid dreams. So the next one could be, okay, I want to sustain my lucid dream, because a lot of times that's the next hard thing, is you become lucid and get so excited you wake up, right? But then, okay, I want to have a longer lucid dream. And then once you do that, a lot of times people have this phase that I call the desire fulfillment phase, where you realize you can do anything. And so, like, for me, I'm allergic to wheat. And so I would go and get donuts anytime I would become lucid, because lucid dreams are like as real, like I was saying, as waking reality. I would go and I would eat a donut and it would taste just like it really does in waking reality. And it was so amazing. So that was the next intent. Okay, I'm going to have fun. I'm going to go eat nice things and experience nice delights. But then after that, that phase kind of wears off. Then you have an intent. Okay, now I want to connect to my higher self or my inner child. And I want to have a dialogue about what's going on in my life. Okay, now I want to experience this totally transcendental, transformational experience that I could, you know, like spiritual, very spiritual experience. Within Tibetan dream yoga, you know, one of the framework of it is really about using lucid dreaming to prepare for the bardos of death, to prepare for the death process after you die, and realizing the clear light of mind, being able to see both all of the illusions that are created by the mind, and then come into this clear light awareness. And so within the lucid dreaming practice, from that framework, that's one of the goals too. One of the intents is to experience that in the dream time. So you better prepare your mind, your consciousness, for having that experience once you pass over out of this life, out of this waking reality permanently. And so, yeah, just drawing that parallel. And one other thing I wanted to say about the drumming journeys in tandem with lucid dreaming practice is, again, being raised in that practice of drumming journeys by my mom really primed my mind to be able to enter lucid dreaming in the dream time more. Because as you can hear, it's a tool and technology that is ancient, that takes people from their conscious waking mind into the dream time. And that's also an advanced lucid dreaming practice, where as you're falling asleep, you maintain your waking awareness the whole process through, rather than how normally we go to sleep, our waking lucid consciousness blacks out, and then we're back in a dream. We're in the dream material. So through the drumming journeys, it's a way that's very accessible to everyone to be able to take their waking consciousness into a more dream time experience. And it's amazing, because people think, oh, I'm just imagining, you know, it's just, I'm going to be listening to the drum beat and then I'm going to imagine these things. But really, at a certain point, it is like a dream where it shifts over, and then you are being met with a different awareness. And you're not just thinking, okay, next I want this thing to happen or I want this thing to happen. It really is like the dream time, where you aren't just creating it from your imagination, but something else is coming to meet you.
I think that was also kind of my question. Like, if you're lucid in the dream state, what are the limits of creating any experience that you wish to have? I guess that's kind of, my question. Are there any limits?
That's a wonderful question. Yeah. We in our deck too, we've created different cards that talk about all of these different aspects. And one of the cards that we have is called co-author. And that's because in all of my lucid dreaming experiences, as well as many others that I've talked to, there is a, I don't know if I'd even call it a limit, but there is a difference. People think that, okay, I'm going to become lucid and I'm going to be able to do whatever I want and I can create whatever I want and I can have total control over my dream time. And a lot of times that's what psychologists get worried about, or like their apprehension around lucid dreaming. They're like, well, is that good to be able to control everything and to not, be interacting and engaging with dream material in this more natural, and I put that in quotes, in this more natural way. But really what happens is that you become lucid, and yes, you do have a much higher level of agency in the dream time than you do when you're just immersed in a non-lucid dream. And yet, with that agency, there's also what I again call this co-authoring force that comes to meet you that you don't have complete and total control. So I always give an example of that, what that looks like. One lucid dream that I had, it was when I was reading again about these various practices you could do once you became lucid. And one of them was to change the material of the dream. And so I was going to change the day to night. And I became lucid. I looked up in the sky. It was an expansive, beautiful kind of cloudy sky. And I said, okay, I'm going to turn it into nighttime now. And I moved my hand over like I was conducting the sky, and it did. It changed into night. And I was like, wow, that's so amazing. I did it. I controlled it. I made it happen. But then all of a sudden it changed back into daytime. And I was like, wait a minute, I didn't do that. And then I was like, okay, here's another thing I'm going to do. I'm going to summon a friend over, like bring a friend to me. And so I thought of this friend and I thought of him really hard. And then, yep, there they were. And I was like, cool, I did it. I had this friend appear. But then I looked back and their face was totally different and they were a different person. And then it's kind of like this really playful force that comes to meet you. And it's a really profound experience to be met that you're not alone, even in those dream realms, and that there is something else that is directing and guiding, co-directing, co-authoring the dream experience with you. So yeah, again, you can hear, you don't have complete control over lucid dreams, but you have a lot of agency and ability to work with the dream world and dream material in ways you could never do before. And so it's so exciting. And that power and that feeling of agency really translates into waking reality too. Because a lot of people say, okay, lucid dreaming's fun and great, but that's just contained in this dream time. How does it actually show up as benefits in my waking reality? And one example of that is, yes, when you wake up from a lucid dream, you feel so empowered. You realize how much agency you actually do have in this waking reality too. You carry over those lessons and insights and lived experiences of the lucid dreaming realms and what you've done in those places into your waking consciousness. And so it can give a lot of confidence and like security in oneself and one's knowing when you have those lucid dream experiences.
This is, and, this is very interesting to me, because this whole concept of co-authoring, I wonder, why it is even in those moments where you don't have, and this may be a very stupid question, why we only have a certain level of control, even the dream within the dream. I'm sure there are times where you've had unexpected guests, arrive, even if you're lucid, I imagine, right? Both of you, or?
Yes. Yeah, I'll say a little and then I'll let my mom say something too. So it's really powerful to have a co-authoring force, right? Because it does help show us that we're not alone. And you can look at it many ways. You can look at it as God. You can look at it as your higher self or your psyche, however, you are personally oriented. But there is this communication and conversation that's happening. And if we have total, complete control over everything all the time, like that's not how it is in waking reality. Right. It's also not how it is in the dream time, because there is a lesson and there is a purpose in interacting with what's called the I-thou relationship, which I think my mom was probably about to talk about more too, but you're met with this other authoring force.
In Buddhism, there's this word from the Pali language that says paticca samuppada, and that means the interdependent co-arising of all phenomenon. Interdependent co-arising of all phenomenon. So we are not alone, as Nisha is saying. Everything is being created interdependently. And I think other cultures have realized that or remembered that a lot more than our pioneer independent Western culture with the ego taking off into grandiosity, right? Has gotten that interdependent creating of reality, but that's the truth of it. And so part of the training in the drumming journey is to learn to follow after your power, animal. So you're trained to follow power, to learn how to work with power in a responsible way by learning to have this relationship with this animal. And this animal is your guide. And it's humbling for humans because really the animals are extremely wise beings. They're not less than us, no, more than us. And they are teaching us to navigate in these realms. So step by step, you learn how to follow after your power animal. And it takes you on all these adventures where you're learning this complete interdependence with it as your teacher and guide to help you heal your life and your ancestry and know how to navigate. You've got to learn how to have a relationship. So as Nisha was talking about co-author, we are co-authoring the creation of reality. We're not creating it by ourselves. And it depends who you hook up with too as your co-authors, right? So, hey, we have to learn to find wise guides and to have discernment and to, you know, test the spirits and learn who you are following. And so there are different teachings that we give about how to test the spirits and how to understand that you can trust this guide. And there are many, many, as we can just imagine, you know, if there are many types of being human, there are many types of other beings. There are many universes. So there's a lot out there. And we do have to have ethical principles. So I worked for many, many years with the Huichol people from central Mexico. And they are a dreaming culture that has remained practicing dream culture right up until recent times. And they taught us certain ethical principles that I'm talking about here. So when you go into the dream time, the first is that you have to go and do your shadow work so that you're using power correctly. And then you'll know it because it's the path of heart. And you will be working from a very loving place for the highest good of all. So it's not about your own individual aggrandizement or seeking some reward for yourself. You'll know that you're on the path of heart if you are doing whatever you're doing for the highest good of all. Isn't that great to realize that that is the ancient teaching? When you think about leaders on our planet, a lot of them aren't doing it for the highest good. Yeah. So are they following, right?
They'll tell you that, but you know, it doesn't happen. You know, I'm kind of wondering whether it's through the dream state or if it's through even the drumming, if there's an experience you want to have or something you want to learn, or let's say a piece of information you want to access, are you ever met with the answer or the response, no? Are you ever told no? For both of you.
That's a great question, right? Because that shows that it's not just about your will getting anything. Mm-hmm. One thing that I was told no about that I kept going back and back because I didn't want a no answer. Mm-hmm. But I had done so much work toward my PhD, but then all these circumstances came towards me that I wasn't allowed to finish it and get the final degree acknowledged. And so through the years after that, I always wanted to complete the PhD. And so I actually ultimately had a near-death experience, which sometimes shamanic teachers do actually go to the realms of the death. So when I had this near-death experience through a car accident, I asked the guides that I met there that I recognized as my oldest, dearest companions. And I said, you know, this time around in my incarnation, I really want to complete that PhD. And so show me how I'm going to do that. That's what I want to accomplish. And they just kindly looked at me and said, no, no, you don't need it this time. That's not our plan for you. And so, no, just let go of that. So, right, I didn't want that. That wasn't something I intended, but that was the answer that I got. And so to accept that for this time, that it wasn't, you know, there were reasons for me to not have that. Another time I had a big business that I owned, a retreat center, and I was really wanting to forge through and keep it going. And I went on a drumming journey to find out, how are you going to help me keep this center going? And my big dragon power animal came and it flew up, covering the whole sky over top of the center. And then it blew out its fire onto the buildings and incinerated them and said, no, you're not meant to keep going here. We're taking you somewhere else to do something else now. So let go. So they show you, no, a big giant no sometimes for plans that you have for your life. But then with such clear guidance and such a clear answer from the other dimension, then you're able to let go and trust into that, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's such a huge boon to my life, to be able to trust in certain moments of giant letting go, that it was the right thing to let go because I was guided. So thanks for asking that question. It's a great question.
And I think along with that too, I totally agree that there's, you know, there's the ability to go into your dream time. And if you go lucidly too, you can really ask these very direct questions. And then you see it's not just your will or your conscious mind dictating it, because you might get answers that you don't want that are different than what you want to hear. But like my mom's saying, you can really trust the truth of that then, because you are going in and you're able to access that deep well of knowledge. And another thing that your question made me think about is how are within the lucid dreaming practice and within the dream time, you can really trust it too, because it moves at the pace that you're ready for. And so if, say, it might be like a no in this moment because you're not quite there, you're not quite ready to have that type of experience. And I really love lucid dreaming because rather than having it be something that, it, like, you know, psychedelics have gotten really popular and they're great for certain uses. I'm not against them at all, but sometimes people can start using them in this way of an externalized source of accessing these liminal and transformative spaces, and they can become overly dependent on it. And also you're interacting with something, a substance that's outside of yourself that's giving you this experience. So sometimes it can push people too far too fast, right? Or they can choose, like, I'm going to take a macro dose and then blast off, and they might not quite be ready. Their psyche might not be ready for that. And so that's why I always train people, if you want to do psychedelics, even doing the lucid dreaming and drumming journey practices are the precursor to that. You know, in many traditions around the world, they have been for a long time, but they teach you how to access those realms inside of yourself. And you realize that you don't need to be dependent on these external sources, because really it's our birthright to be able to go into these liminal realms through dreaming. And it will take you at a pace that you are ready for, that is your natural built-in pacing. And you won't face things that are too fast, too far, because your psyche is presenting it to you within your own being. So that's another kind of like no that is built into lucid dreaming, is it's not going to take you further than you're ready to go. So you can really trust it that way. Whereas when you are interacting with external substances, then it might take you further. It might take you past your no. And so that's the navigation that can happen through learning how to do lucid dreaming and drumming journey.
Well, let me say, Norma and Nisha, I could keep you both here like all day long. I have a billion questions because I find the dream world so, I find it fun, informative, enlightening, and just, you know, granted, like I've never, at least I can't remember if I've ever had a lucid dream, but I've never, you know, actively like tried to have it. It just, there's so many answers, I think, that we can, or information that we can access, experiences we can have. But like you said, you know, it's like your intuition is speaking to you, you know, from these other practices, and you don't have to rely, you know, or have a dependency on, I don't know, just as an example here, like you said, mushrooms or ayahuasca or whatever it is people are doing, right, to try to reach their inner selves through these other means. I think this is one of the best ways to do it. And it's exciting, and it feels, you know, I feel very grateful that we have access, you know, to that, like we can do this, but it is, you know, doing the work as well. So both of you, how can people find you if they want to work with you? What is the title of your deck, your book, and where can they find those?
Absolutely. So the title of our deck, which is an oracle deck and a book, 200 page book that teaches all about lucid dreaming, it's called Lucid Dreaming, Lucid Living. And that is available online and in stores nationwide. And also it's translated into 5 different languages. So Spanish, German, Dutch, French, and Russian. So if you speak any of those languages too, you can get it in that language. So that's available. Our newest book, which is coming out again, that my mom talked about, Navigating Liminal Realms. It'll be out in the summer of this year. And again, available online and in bookstores. And then to get in touch with us, our website is luciddreaminglucidliving.com. On there, you can find more about us. You can contact us. And also, we have several classes that are going to be launching soon. A dream work class, that's the foundations of dream work, as well as a lucid dreaming master class, and a few more that are really exciting. So you can sign up to get on the wait list for those courses, which will be launching really soon. On Instagram, it's very simple. It's all lucid dreaming, lucid living. So you can find us on Instagram. I post content about lucid dreaming and lots of little tidbits and tips and tricks and techniques. We also have a YouTube channel, same name, Lucid Dreaming, Lucid Living. So there's many ways to reach out to us. And my mom's website too is normaburton.com if you want to find out more about her drumming journey work, as well as her transformative shadow work and trauma healing system called The Journey to Completion.
That's fantastic. It's very exciting. And again, thank you both for your time today. I learned a lot personally. It just sounds very exciting. Especially, I think it's enticing for people who, you know, don't think that they're dreaming. They don't believe that they're, you know, there's many people I know and they're like, oh yeah, I never dream. And I think, well, don't dream all the time? Like,
I always say to people, everyone dreams. Not everybody remembers their dreams, but it's been scientifically proven every human dreams. So you do dream and you can connect with it.
Definitely. Well, thank you both for being here today. And I'm hoping you guys will come back soon.
We'd love to. Yeah.
Asked great questions that really drew out a lot of important information. So thank you so much for inviting us.
No problem. Thank you for coming on and speaking with me today. I loved our conversation. All right, everybody, please, you know, find them online if you want to take any classes, if you're interested, you know where to find them. And everybody take care. Thank you.